Hello and welcome, or maybe it's welcome back. You've checked into the Newport Storytellers podcast, and we're so happy that you have. This is episode 4 of a 6-part series of stories and music assembled in Newport, west side of the Yarra River, or Birrarung, the River of Mists. Newport is a suburb of Melbourne in Victoria, Australia, and we are your hosts, Matt MacArthur.
And Jackie Kerrin, with a listening adventure made possible by the support of Hobsons Bay City Council through its quick response grants. So, Matt, we've had a short break after the heady excitement of assembling the first 3 episodes.
Yes, Jackie, it was very heady, and I certainly needed a cup of tea and a lie down after all the editing. But now I've revived and I'm ready to launch into the next 3 episodes.
Good to hear, Matt. Oh, and things are different now since we first began with this audio cornucopia. At the time of writing this episode, in late November 2020, the Victorian government had just announced that for the first time since the 29th of February, there were no active COVID cases in Victoria. Melbourne had surfaced from the long, long, long lockdown and strict social isolation, and we could once again go out the front door without wearing a mask. Matt, we could actually now sit in the same room and record this if we chose.
Indeed we could, Jackie. For those who may not know, we recorded our talking bits for the first 3 episodes with me in Altona and you in Newport. That's about 9 kilometres of social separation.
Yeah, or I think it's about 5-ish as the crow flies. However, having mastered recording in this way, we shall continue. I mean, Matt, this is a new skill for us. So let's use it.
Agreed. So let's get cracking, Jackie.
We shall. But first, a quick recap for our listeners. I can sense them asking, so what inspired you both to create this podcast? Well, here it is. Newport fosters a thriving community of musicians and storytellers who practice the art of the raconteur, the reciter of verse, the folk and fairy tale, or as we sometimes say, the said not read or the spoken word.
And we've learned how ephemeral the art of oral storytelling can be. So over the years, we've recorded many of the storytellers. In the light of the separation COVID imposed upon us, it felt like a good idea to dive into the archive, have a rummage, and release some of the tales and music into the universe. After all, we all love a story and a song. Oh, and if you're curious about the audio quality, while observing the restrictions and transcending the limitations imposed on us, we've gathered extra material any which way. Phones, Zoom, USB mics and tin cans on a string.
Ah, yes, we have indeed. So, it's time, Matt. What's the plan? What is the plan for this episode?
The plan. The plan is very episode 4-ish, Jackie. It's an impeccably edited audio buffet. As always, we have 2 stories, and between the stories, our musical advisor, Alan Davies, has something special for us from the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club. And, of course, we have other delights from our audio treasure trove. And we'll close with a lullaby.
Excellent. But before we launch into it, we promise to deliver something interesting about Newport in every episode. So for Ep 4, I thought we could take a few moments to explore Newport Lakes Park, one of the unique and important green spaces in the hood. So let's do it. Newport Lakes Park in a nutshell.
Imagine you're on a bike and you're pedalling along Mason Street. Look for the stones in the centre strip of the road and the sign that says Newport Lakes. You can't miss it. There's a display of endemic grasses and a giant sculpture of a diving duck's bum. Made from bluestone, the lead artist was Simon Perry, the same artist who created Public Purse outside of the Melbourne GPO in Bourke Street. Simon worked with trainee artist Drew Cole in a consultative process with local schools to create Diver, and the result has become a loved Newport icon. Pedal past Diver and the plant nursery on your right, and you've arrived. Lock up your bike and enter 33 hectares of bushland oasis. Now you can go on a choose-your-own-adventure, which is exactly what Jackie did one day with her partner John.
Okay, so here we are. Here's
Newport
the map.
Lakes.
Yeah. So there's look at this map here. There's the North Lake,
yep.
The South Lake, the amphitheatre. What would you call this? Little kind
like
of
a little billabongy thing.
Yeah.
little offshoot from the major lake.
Yeah. And you can, by the looks, if you go in this upper area here on the Northwest Plain, that's where you can take a dog and run them off lead.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, the swans and birds should be on the lakes.
Okay.
Usually are.
Okay, let's go down. It's a little bit windy. Let's hope we don't pick up too much of that on the microphone. So we're on a lookout here, a nice little elevated spot.
Overlooking the South Lake.
Okay. So what can you see through your binoculars?
There's a chestnut teal over there on this side of the lake. And I think I can hear some warblers maybe in the reeds there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little yellow-winged honeyeaters darting around too.
Oh, nice. So what we'll do is we'll go down the hill here and then across the stepping stones, and we might, if we're lucky, we might be able to pick up the sound of those warblers.
Oh, there they are now. I can hear them. Yep, directly across.
Okay, let's give it a go. Okay, oh, we're coming over a wooden bridge and turning to the right, turning east. Mm-hmm. And we're coming up to the stepping stones. Ah, and here's the sign. It's going to tell us about some of the wildlife in the park. Let's have a look. Where to start?
It's a beautiful label, this one. Really lovely. Mm. Gives you an idea of what's going on above the lake. The birds and the insects. Damselflies, dragonflies, craneflies. What's that one? True midge.
This is one of the things that really interests me, the short-finned eel.
Mm. Well, they're all around here, aren't they?
Yeah, we know they travel up to the Coral Sea.
Yep, yeah, they're extraordinary travellers and then come back to the same spot.
Mm. So the Coral Sea, that's...
The young ones come back, not the old ones. They finish up somewhere, I think.
Yeah. So the Coral Sea, that's up towards, what, Timor?
No, it's on the other side. The Coral Sea is in between Queensland and Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, out that way.
So these short-finned eels that we get here in Newport Lakes make that journey.
Epic journey.
We might get lucky to see an eastern long-necked turtle.
Yep, they're over on the North Lake on the eastern side. We see them regularly over there.
Mm. We've got carp. Mosquito fish.
Yep.
It's
tadpole shrimp. Mm. Caddisfly larvae.
Let's cross on the stepping stones. These are beautiful, big, wide basalt stepping stones that separate the two lakes. Ooh, it's a bit windy down here, a bit chilly.
Yeah, well, we've reached the other side of the lake on the eastern side, and there's a beautiful mosaic here, one of a series around. This one's got two little moorhens in a lily pad with a, looks like a green bell frog looking over some of the leaves. Yeah, beautifully made.
Listening to the reed warbler here.
We're only 2-3 metres away from the bird in the reeds, but we certainly can't see it. It's so hard to see. It's tucked away in there.
And it sounds like there's another bird responding on the other side of the lake, but that just might be my imagination.
Yeah, I think this one's really going off. They sing from when they arrive from Indonesia, and then they just keep on singing and then breed, and I think they've finished the breeding cycle now, and they're not singing quite so much, but this one's really enjoying a little bit of sunlight.
You're looking at those little ducks through your binoculars. What can you see?
The three little ducks working their way on the edge of the water through the reeds, and they're sometimes pecking insects from the tops of the reeds, reaching up and sometimes out of the air, and at other times they're chasing them through the algae. Yep, you can see they're sort of filtering them through their beak at the moment. So they're independent, but they can't fly, of course. They're just little ducklings, and they hang around with their parent for protection, but they feed themselves.
They are very, very sweet. Entering into a very sheltered bit of the path here. Lots of trees, and the vegetation's looking fantastic after all the rain we've had. What can you see?
Blackbird just darted through there, and a couple of little fairy wrens. One is totally blue and the other one is eclipsed, so it's a young male that's turning into a fully hormone driven adult.
I think there might be some purple swamp hens nesting up here. I just saw one cross the path. Let's go up and have a look. Did you say you could see the data?
Yep, so we're on the North Lake now, and there's some dead trees over on the other side in the lake, and there's a darter there, which is an amazing sort of big cormorant-like bird with a long pointy beak that it spears fish with. It's just drying out, probably after some fishing. Big bird, you know. It's got about a metre and a half wingspan. And there's a Australasian grebe over there duck diving. So one tiny bird and one of the biggest birds that come on the lake.
I just want to ask a question. How does a grebe duck dive?
It dubs chicks.
Okay, so we've come down the slope into the amphitheatre. Yeah. And we're looking at purple swamp hens.
Yeah, there's three of them making their way slowly towards us with their big feet.
Beautiful, beautiful purpley blue chests.
Yeah, and a red kind of cake, do they, on the top of their head.
You call that a cake?
I think it's called something like a cake.
Is it spelt like cake?
No, C-A-C-Q-U-E, I believe.
Ah, okay. We won't trust each other's spelling, I don't think.
And there's some other little birds. Yeah. They are lorikeets, I can hear, and some wattle birds flying around.
This is where the Newport Lakes have their bush dance once a year. So we've done the circuit.
Yep, looking into this little billabongy thing, seeing mosquito fish. I think they're mosquito fish come up to the surface, but in this little spots of sun.
Well, we struck it lucky for the weather and that little bit of rain. I don't know whether that was the reason, but I've never heard so many birds singing out. Like, the soundscape in here has just been amazing. So we've got lots and lots of interesting things to send through to Matt, and he's going to have fun putting it all together. Aren't you, Matt?
Sounds like you two had some fun.
We did. We did indeed. It took us two trips to the park to capture the audio because the first time we felt very self-conscious walking around and talking into my phone. So we went back and tried again, and this time it had just rained and the birds were singing around us everywhere and we didn't care at all if we looked a bit odd.
I think talking into the phone is perhaps the least odd thing about you and John Jackie.
Yeah, okay. We'll just keep that private, okay? So, Matt MacArthur, story number one. What have you chosen?
Well, Jackie, this may seem like nepotism, but I can't help that. Terrius MacArthur joined us for our final evening in the Newport Community Hub in 2019 with this traditional American tale. When we made plans to reconvene in 2020, little did we imagine that this would be our final gathering of face-to-face storytelling for a while. As 2020 rolled on and COVID-19 caused us to shift to virtual gatherings, the memory of this night is smile-making. This story needs no introduction from me. Terrius does a splendid job introducing herself. Here's Wait Until Martin Comes, told by Terrius MacArthur.
So I come from a long, long history of storytellers. I'm going to tell a story from African-American community, and it's a southern one. So if I slip into a southern draw, you understand why. So John had a hard life. John's been through a lot. You hear about John in a lot of stories from down south. He was an interesting character. And this particular story talks about a night, might have happened in October, because it started out perfectly fine. And he started on his way home, walking through the fields. And of course, comes the thunder and the lightning and the rainstorm. Poor John, though, it happened at just the wrong spot. It happened outside of the old plantation. Now, pretty much every southern area, every southern community will have that plantation. Run down, old, decrepit, haunted, of course. So now, John had a choice to make. Do I keep going in this? And by the way, a southern storm is nothing like Melbourne storms. It's not a little drizzle, not even a bit of rain. It's literally like someone pouring a bucket on you. So you can't really see very far, and you do get very wet and drenched. So John's hard decision, do I stop in the haunted house, or do I keep going? Wow. Oh, John's like, I'm not afraid of cat. I'm going to go in the house. So in he walks across the decrepit old porch, through the half-broken door, and into the living room, where there's an old decrepit chair, and then there's a fireplace. So John heads over to the fireplace, manages to get a fire started because it's starting to get a bit chilly. Looks at the decrepit chair, decides I'll give it a go. So over he goes to the chair and sits down, and it's a bit wobbly. Seat might give out, but I'm sure the storm will stop eventually. So he settles in front of the fire and has a nice warm evening. Looking up, there's no Hanks in here. What are we talking about? So he had a nice stare in the fire, as you do. After a little bit, he sort of notices he hears a bit of something behind him, coming through the door. Well, John is brave. I'm not gonna look, there's nothing there, I'm all right, in my chair. And eventually, out of the corner of his eye, he sees a little shadow. And as it comes around, he notices it's a black cat, blackest cat he's ever seen. Normal sized cat, with his eyes, the cat's eyes are glowing a little bit green. No, it's just a light on the fire. Well, the cat saunters around and heads towards the fire. He sort of eases up close to the fire and then picks up his feet and walks and sits in the fire. Sits on his haunches, has a look at John. Oh, suited up man here, says the little black cat. And John is determined to not look at the eyes of the cat. Oh, it's a nice little fire. Cat says, well, what should I do with man? Ah, I better wait until Martin comes. So he hunkers down and waits. And after a little while, John was thinking, it's just a little cat. I'm sure this is all my imagination. I'm very strong and brave, man. I'll be all right. Hunkers down his chair a little bit more. And then he hears something. Pit-a-pat, feet coming. Doesn't want to look at it. And out of the corner of his eye, he sees another black cat. Blacker than midnight. Blacker than death. This cat is the size of a hound. And that cat walks over, sees the first cat, and they give a nod, as cats do. The second cat walks over, sees the fire, and hunkers in, settles down, and grabs a bit of coal, starts chewing on it. A little smaller cat goes up and goes, you see that? Yeah, I see it. It's mad. Another cat says, yeah, what do you think we ought to do? Big cat says, we better wait till Martin comes. So he hunkers down. John's getting a bit nervous now. Sweat's starting to come. But now he's in that real dilemma. If I move much, they'll notice me. But if I stay here, maybe they'll eventually forget me. That's what I'm hoping. Well, he's got big hopes, doesn't he, John? Because sure enough, not long later, there's another little noise behind him, but it's not quite so little this time. It's a bit louder. Now, out of the corner of his eye comes another cat. Not just blacker than midnight, not just blacker than death, the color of a cave, the absence of light, dark, black. And not the size of a hound, sides of a horse. And on comes this big cat. And John's thinking, oh, here comes Martin. I've had it now. So he switches in his chair to think about maybe getting up. And of course, just then the chair gives way and off he falls into the chair. Feet straight up, arms up. He's like, okay, now I'm really in a dilemma. Do I make a lot of noise and try to get out of here? Or maybe they'll just forgive me. Well, this big, huge cat walks over to the other ones. And it goes, makes its way into the fire. And it hunkers down and picks up coal and has a nibble and spreads its hand in the ash, his paws, and sort of wipes it on his face like a powder puff. And the big cat looks at the other two and goes, what's that? Yeah. That's mad. And now they're thinking to each other, oh, what should we do with it? And the biggest one goes, well, we ought to wait till Martin comes up. Well, I'll tell you how, John didn't care how much noise he made. He goes, let's call it. He goes, out the door, through the rain. He goes, y'all tell Martin that John's left.
Such a fun story. And I remember we had quite a crowd in the Newport Hub on that night.
Jackie, before we move on, I'd like to make mention that as well as telling a good yarn, Terrius is a talented textile artist and has participated in our local art and industry festival. 10 days of events celebrating and investigating the ever-changing industrial and manufacturing heartland of Australia. And that is, of course, Hobson's Bay. Terrius also made my very big and rather adorable sea dragon puppet that I use in my marine education programs.
I love Sam the sea dragon.
So do I, Jackie. So does the audience. Sam tends to get more bookings than I do.
And now it's time for our singer-songwriter spotlight with our music man, Alan Davies. Our featured artist is Megan Slattery. Megan is well known to folk club regulars as a singer and a guitarist with the Angelicats, and she's also a graphic artist. Megan created the logos for the folk club and the Newport Folk Festival, and as if that's not enough, she's also an accomplished songwriter. Here's Megan in conversation with Alan discussing her song, Indigo Blue.
Megan, I understand this is a song about a blanket. What's the story of the blanket?
Hi, Alan. Yes, so this song called Indigo Blue is about a blanket. It's actually about a dark blue blanket. And it's a blanket that covered my mum when my mum was very unwell in about 2011. She was at home and it covered her bed and while she was sick. And I noticed that once my mum passed away, that my dad would sleep with this blue blanket on top of his bed, on top of the doona. And at the time, I didn't think too much about it, except noted that Dad had obviously taken this blue blanket and used it as like a connection between him and Mum. She was gone, but this blue blanket was still a connection, I guess, between him and Mum.
And do you remember the moment when you thought, this is something to write a song about?
Yes, well, then in about 2016, the Newport Fillon Folk Club held a songwriting workshop day that I joined up for. And at that time, my son was fairly young and my dad was going to look after my son for me during the day when I was at the workshop. And I stayed the night at my dad's house. And in his spare room, I noticed that this dark blue blanket was now folded up on a chair in the spare room. And I went, oh, that's interesting that Dad has no longer sleeps with that dark blue blanket on his bed, but it's put aside. And the next day, the songwriting workshop, I was kind of grappling, you know, what am I going to write a song about for this workshop? And I remembered the blue blanket, the dark blue blanket, and that was the inspiration for my song.
And it obviously made you reflect on the sort of life story of the blanket too, because the song even goes back to the factory where it was made.
Yeah, so I was fascinated then about the idea that how objects can help people through difficult times. And you never know when you've made something, or you might have said something, or you might have written a song about something that has resonated with someone, and they've taken that and it's helped them through a hard time or a difficult period. And so I was fascinated by the idea that this dark blue blanket that had randomly been made by some worker in a factory somewhere in the world became such an important connector for my mum and dad.
And how do you go about writing a song? What's your process?
My process of writing a song is, it does take weeks, and I'll have a notebook with lots of pencil scribblings in them, and I'll get my initial idea and I'll write about it, and then I might just make a few notes about, oh, what else do I want to include, and then the words will fashion themselves over a period of time, and I'll move lyrics around and I'll swap positions and I'll change words until it comes together in some sort of poetry, in a way, I guess. It's the little story comes together. And, you know, you change verses around so that the flow of the storytelling makes sense. It's like editing or writing a film, writing a story, doing a piece of design, you know, what's needed and what is superfluous.
And when you listen back to the song now, what do you feel?
It's interesting because I hadn't listened to the song for quite a few years, because I wrote it quite a while ago now. And when I came back and sang it again, I felt quite moved again by the fact that I could observe how Dad had come out the other side of his grieving process and got back into life. So I guess, yeah, I felt quite moved and joyful that he was able to get through that process as he did.
Wrap me in indigo blue, fill up the space once filled by you, weave back together our moments in the time with this blanket of love. It was yours, now it's mine. Wrap me in indigo blue. Made in a factory where they didn't say much, but at night when he sleeps, it's a comfort to touch. We covered a mother as she drifted away. Now it covers a father as he struggles to stay. Wrap me in indigo blue and fill up the space. Once filled by you, breathe back together our moments in a time with this blanket of love. It was yours, now it's mine. Wrap me in indigo blue. Oh, wrap me in indigo mine. Oh, wrap me in indigo blue. been indigo blue. The textures of a life they ain't feeling so great. The colours he saw weren't those planned for today, but I've watched him, he's making new yellows from grey. So wrap me in indigo blue. Wrap me in indigo blue. Oh, wrap me. In indigo blue.
And that was singer-songwriter Megan Slattery with her song Indigo Blue. I mentioned earlier that Megan is a graphic artist and she has designed for the Newport Fiddlin Folk Club and Festival, and she's also contributed to the Williamstown Literary Festival and the Art and Industry Festival. We've placed a link to her website on our podcast page, newportstorytellers@nffc.org.au. So please visit the Newport Fiddlin Folk Club website and go for a virtual wander. There is much to enjoy, and it's never too late to learn an instrument or to sing or to tell stories. Check out the calendar of events.
So, Jackie, this brings us to story number two. What have you got?
Well, Matt, there was a gem amongst gems in our treasure trove, Alex and Miles Carnham with The Boy Who Drew Cats. Alex and Miles are father and son, and I think this is a great example of the kind of fun you can have telling a story in tandem. But the story behind this story, well, I think it's pretty fascinating. Listen to this. The Boy Who Drew Cats is a Japanese fairy tale translated by Koizumi Yakumo, formerly Patrick Lafcadio Hearn. Born in 1850 on a Greek island from Greek-Irish descent, Lafcadio Hearn was a writer who later moved to Japan and became a naturalized citizen and changed his name. Koizumi married a Japanese woman and they had four children, and apparently his writings about Japan were seen to be offering the Western world a glimpse into what was then a largely unknown culture. The original title of the manuscript was The Artist of Cats, and it was the first of a five-volume set of tales printed on crepe paper and illustrated with colour woodblock prints and published in 1898. Matt, I really want a copy of that. Here is The Boy Who Drew Cats.
This is a story sort of in honour of the cat that Miles and I share house with. Now, I don't know about you, but most people have a naming practice for their pets. Now, all of our animals for years and years and years always had Norwegian-type names. So there was Bjarki and Falk and so forth, and now Odin, I suppose. But someone brought me a rescue cat. It was big and orange and fluffy, and I was told that its name was Tamiko, which is the Japanese word for the king in a game of chess. And it suits him well. He sits there and does all regal things, right up until he decides to pounce on you. But, you know, you really, really, really need your ear licked. And drop a dead rat on your face sometimes as you sleep. Yes, that's another story. But anyway, we thought we'd do a cat story. So, once there was a boy who loved to draw. And his name was Georgie. Now, Georgie grew up on a farm and had many, many brothers and sisters, all of whom were very, very useful and helpful to his mother and father. But not Georgie. Because Georgie could spend hours every day just drawing in the dirt with a stick. And what he drew, what he always drew, the only things he ever drew were
cats. Cats, cats, and more cats. Big cats, small cats, thin cats, fat cats, 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 cats.
It's true. You must stop drawing all of these cats, said his father one day. How can you ever be a farmer if all you do is draw cats? I'm sorry, said Georgie to his father, and he meant it. I'll try not to do it anymore, and he meant it. But every time one of the farm cats would wander across the yard, he'd drop whatever chores he was doing, pick up a stick, and draw a cat. "He'll never make a farmer," said his father sadly to his wife. "Well, perhaps he could be a priest," said his mother. And his father took Georgie into the village, to the temple, talked to the priest, and the priest said, "I would be happy to teach him." Mm-hmm. So Georgie now lived at the temple, and he was given his own box of writing implements. There was a brush and an ink stick and a stone. And Georgie loved to make ink. He would fill the depression in the stone with some water. He'd dip the ink stick and then rub it on the sides of the stone and then make the watercolour into ink. And then he would dip his brush and inevitably draw a cat. And so all the rice paper he was given at the temple to learn his reading and writing skills, to practice and practice and practice, inevitably turned into hours and hours and hours of drawing cats. "You must stop drawing cats, Georgie," said the priest one day. "You will never be a priest if all you do is cats." "I'm sorry, wise master," Georgie would say, and he meant it. I will try not to," and he meant that too, because all of the other children at the temple, they worked very, very hard. They learnt their reading, they learnt their writing, and they faithfully copied all the things they were meant to copy. But not Georgie. Georgie just used all his rice paper to do
cats. Cats, cats, and more cats. Big cats, small cats, thin cats, fat cats, 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 cats.
Now, if that wasn't bad enough, when he started running out of practice rice paper, he started drawing cats on all of the folding screens in the temple, and soon all the rice paper panels in every screen, in every room, in every chamber of the temple were cats. "Georgie," said the priest sadly, "you will never make a priest. You must go home now." Georgie went back to his room, packed up his goods, packed up his writing kit, and set off for home. But he didn't want to go home. He thought his father would be angry with him. And it occurred to him that there was a neighbouring village that also had a temple, and, well, maybe that priest would take him in. You never knew. Maybe the priest liked cats. So off he went. It was quite a long walk, and it was fully dark by the time he arrived. It was a bit hard to find the temple, because even though he walked through the village and he remembered vaguely where it was, there were no lights burning at all, no lamps, just dark shape against the black sky. And he went up the stairs, and he knocked on the door, and there was no answer. So he pulled the door open, and he looked around the heavy door, and inside was all black. He called, no one answered. He found a lamp close by the door and lit it. And as the light spread through the room, he felt so happy he clapped his hands, because the room was awash in folding screens, and every one of them was blank as could be. So Georgie took out his writing kit, and he poured some water into the stone, and he set the ink stick into the water, and he ground it around, and then he coloured the water with the ink stick, and then he dipped his brush, and he began to draw. And there was only one thing he drew.
Cats. Cats, cats, and more cats. Big cats, small cats, thin cats, fat cats, 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 cats.
And when he had drawn cats, all manner of cats, on all of the little screens, he saw the one giant rice paper screen that ran almost the length of the whole room. And he smiled, and he dipped his brush in the ink, and he drew the very biggest and the very most beautiful cat that he had ever drawn in his life. It was black, and it had silver tips in its fur, and it was all curled up and asleep, and it was magnificent. And when he finished, he finally realized how late it was and how tired he was from his walk. And he was going to bed down right there in the hall when he realized that it was just too big a room and he couldn't be comfortable. Something about it was all wrong. So he set off and he found a nice cupboard, and he climbed into the cupboard and slid the door shut after him, and there he went to sleep. And maybe he slept for a short time or a long time, but it was certain that he woke up with a fright. Because just outside the cupboard door, he could hear the scratching and scratching and growling of what sounded like a very large wild animal. Suddenly he knew why there was no one there at the temple. He didn't want to be there at the temple anyway now. Practically seeking him through the door. And he was terrified. But then he heard another sound. It was a mighty roar that he felt through his bones. It was a yowling, screeching, horrible sound. And then a cry of surprise and pain. There was a giant thump that shook the whole floor. There was a battle raging outside his door, and he knew not between what. And then there was one ginormous crash, a squeak that sounded like it was from the depths of hell. And then the sounds of some soft, giant feet. And then silence. He stayed awake in terror right up until he went to sleep, because he was tired. And when he woke up, it was dawn. He could see light coming in underneath the cupboard door, and he slowly, carefully, braced himself and opened the door. As he slid it open, he saw that in the middle of the room, on the floor, lay a monster rat. This rat was how big?
The size of a cow.
That's a very big rat.
Perhaps even bigger.
And it was dead. Killed by something with teeth and claws. And as he walked around it and looked at it, he felt that this was what was going to take his life. But what had killed it? He looked around at all the screens, now in daylight, and looked at his cats. But wait. The giant cat, the big cat, the cat almost the size of the whole room. Hadn't he drawn it with the head to the left and the tail to the right? And now it was the other way around? Well, yes, he was sure of it. And the only way that could happen is if it had come down, done battle, and then, being a cat, gone to sleep in an entirely different position just to be that way. And all he could do was put his hands together and bow and thank the cat for saving his life, and to say that no one ever would stop him drawing cats. Not ever. Now, when the townspeople from the village came to the temple and saw the dead rat, they made him a hero. The rat had been terrorizing their village had been stealing their children. It was a shameful secret that they didn't talk about, but now there it was, dead. The local priest, who had been hiding elsewhere from the rat, let him stay in the temple, but he didn't become a priest. Georgie became an artist, celebrated and known throughout the land. His works praised and admired, and only ever of one particular subject.
Cats. Thank you. Cats, 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 cats.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex and Miles. The Boy Who Drew Cats was recorded in 2017 at the Newport Community Hub. Young Miles would not be so young anymore. Alex has been a great supporter of the Storytellers. A filmmaker, he's recorded us, shone lights on us, and taken some wonderful stills. Alex, we thank you.
Matt, remember in episode one of this podcast, you said that any theme would be purely accidental. We just had two cat stories. You know, I reckon that's getting pretty theme-ish.
It is theme-ish now you point it out. And before we move on from cats, cats and more cats, and being serious for a moment, I urge cat owners to think of their fur babies as inside pets. And you all know why. Two words. Urban wildlife. There is an abundance of Australian wildlife, including birds, mammals, insects and reptiles, living in Newport, and they are preyed upon by free-roaming cats. Let's keep the wild critters in places like the Newport Lakes Park safe.
Well said, Matt, and spoken like a man who has a cat tree in his living room and the lover of nature that you are.
So, Jackie, it's lullaby time. And for this episode, we have Kumbaya. A popular song in the folk revival of the 1950s and 60s, it was recorded by Joan Baez, The Weavers, Odetta, Pete Seeger, Sweet Honey in the Rock, just to name a few. And when a tune becomes so popular, we can become immune to its beauty. Kumbaya, or Come By Here, is a song with a contradictory history, not uncommon in the folk world, making the origins hard to track. The Gullah Geechee people of coastal Georgia and South Carolina say that the song comes from their people. It's robust and enduring and speaks to the heart. Here's local songstress Dharma Picking with Kumbaya.
Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, Kumbaya. Someone singing, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone singing, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone singing, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, Kumbaya. Someone praying, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone's praying, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone's praying, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, Kumbaya. Someone's sleeping, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone's sleeping, my lord, Kumbaya. Someone sleeping, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya. Kumbaya.
Thank you, Dharma. We've put a link to the earliest recording of Kumbaya on our podcast page. This recording was made on a wax cylinder in 1926. And, of course, there's a link to where you can find Dharma. So this brings us to the end of Episode 4 of the Newport Storytellers podcast. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to sharing more local stories and music in Episode 5. It's goodbye from me, Matt MacArthur.
And me, Jackie Caron. Matt and I acknowledge that recording the editing of this podcast has taken place on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unbroken connection to country that has long been mapped by story, song and dance, and we pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to the elders of all nations, and to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who've been listening to this podcast.
We thank the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club, under whose auspices we bloom. Hobson's Bay Library and the Williamstown Literary Festival, who have made space for our voices, and all the storytellers and musicians who have given permission for us to share their work. For more information on the music, the musicians, your hosts, me, Jackie and Alan, and the storytellers, visit our page on the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club website, nffc.org.au.
The Newport Storytellers podcast is edited by my co-host, Matt MacArthur, who also recorded Tarius MacArthur's story, Wait Until Martin Comes. The Boy Who Drew Cats was recorded by Alex Carnham.
All the people in this podcast have contributed to events produced in Newport and the city of Hobsons Bay under the banners of Storytelling Australia Victoria and the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club. Not all the storytellers live in the local area. Several travel from distant suburbs and even nearby regional towns to join us. And if you've enjoyed listening, spread the word. Stories and music are for sharing.
Hey, Matt, you remember how you missed the last Newport Storyteller Zoom in November because you were in your backyard fixing up your kayak?
Yes.
Well, it was David Kidman from Yorkshire's birthday, and we all sang happy birthday to him over Zoom, and we recorded it. It was such a beautiful collective moment, people united in song from around Australia and across hemispheres.
I'm sorry I missed it. Let's hear it now, and please, everyone, enjoy and feel free to join in. Happy birthday for November 2020, David.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear David. Happy birthday to you. Hip hip.
Hooray!
Jackie, that's exactly why you're not our music advisor. Nice one.